Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Coming up later, we're going to talk about Twinless Twins and their conference or national conference coming up this weekend in Dublin. For the next 40 minutes, though, we have an open forum. So give me a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you want to talk about in the news today? The state puppy mill bill has stalled. What do you think of that? It's done it, stalled many, many times before. Do you think it'll ever get through the Ohio General Assembly? Also, the train was not speeding when it derailed near Wineland Park early yesterday, raising concerns about what did cause it. It could be several weeks before we know. Mitt Romney, the Republican candidate for president, or the presumptive Republican candidate for president, drew boos yesterday when he spoke before the nation's oldest civil rights organization, the NAACP. What do you think of that? Why do you think he went there? Do you think he expected that kind of reaction? What might have been his motive? Some people wonder. Give us a call if you want to talk about it. 614-292-8513. We have an open forum today. What do you want to talk about? Now, of course, you know, I can talk easily for 40 minutes. But if you have something you want to add, please do. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can post your question or comment at our Facebook page as well. The independent investigation into Pennsylvania State University's handling of child sex abuse allegations has found that university administrators, including former president Graham Spanier and the longtime football coach Joe Paterno, quote, repeatedly concealed critical facts, end quote, to avoid bad publicity in connection with reports that former defensive coordinator Jerry Sandusky could be a pedophile. That's coming from the Wall Street Journal, online Wall Street Journal report. If you want to talk about that, give us a call. The report was issued this morning about 9 a.m. by the former Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Louis Free at the request of trustees, and it found that Spanier, Paterno, and along with former athletic director Tim Curley and Vice President Gary Schultz failed to protect against a child sexual predator harming children for over a decade. It goes on to say, our most saddening and sobering finding is the total disregard for the safety and welfare of Sandusky's child victims by the most senior leaders at Penn State. The most powerful men at Penn State failed to take any steps for 14 years to protect the children who Sandusky victimized. It went on to say that Spanier, Schultz, Paterno, and Curley never demonstrated through actions or words any concern for the safety and well-being of Sandusky's victims until after Sandusky's arrest. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have an open forum this hour. I'd like to hear what you want to talk about in the news. If you want to talk politics, we can always do that. There was hope that a bill to stop dog breeders or abusive dog breeders it was hoped that it would pass this year before the legislature, the session ends in December. But it has stalled again until after the November election. Maybe it'll be taken up then. Who knows? The legislation would create a statewide licensing authority that would inspect large-scale breeders. The bill passed the Senate 6 months ago. Let's see. Senator Jim Hughes, a Columbus Republican who sponsored the bill, said that if people knew what was allowed in Ohio, they would be appalled. Do you agree or disagree? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. I'm getting mixed messages in the news about the impact of the Affordable Health Care Act. I hear that it hasn't done the president any hasn't given him necessarily any advantage in his reelection campaign. On the other hand, recent polls have shown that most Americans support the U.S. Supreme Court decision that was released recently upholding the Affordable Care Act. So maybe it really is two sides of a coin, or maybe they're two different coins we're talking about. Anyways, give us a call. Tell us what you think. House Speaker John Boehner says that he thinks there's a better way to manage health care in the United States. For the 33rd time, House Republicans took legislative aim at the nation's new health care law, this time in a largely symbolic vote to repeal it. That's from McClatchy Newspaper's report. The two-day floor debate was orchestrated by GOP leaders in an effort to tap into the deep disagreements that remain 2 years after President Barack Obama's signature domestic achievement became law. Americans continue to give the Affordable Care Act mixed reviews, with conservative and some independent voters among the most opposed. After the Supreme Court upheld the law in a landmark decision this summer, Republican leaders promised another repeal vote. It's a strategy with some risk, as polls show that Americans want to move on. An interesting distinction. Give us a call if you want to talk about that. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Hi, Beth in Clintonville. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Ann. What do you want to talk about? You've got lots of good topics.
I know. Well, you wanted to talk about the puppy mill. You said there's not a lot of awareness about it.
There's not a lot of awareness that, the puppy mills, my understanding is that a lot of the puppy mills are coming from the Amish. And, you know, there's this perception of the Amish as being wholesome, and yet they're making the majority of their money off of puppy mills. And they go directly to Petco and all those places, and people think that they're getting healthy dogs, and they're not. And I actually went to Whole Foods. They had Amish people selling flowers and things in their parking lot, and I went in and I told the manager that a lot of Amish do, you know, participate in puppy mills, and I didn't think that that represented the values of Whole Foods customers. And after that, they were not allowed to do their to sell the flowers there. That may seem unfair, but I mean that's the ugly side of this business. And I don't know if banning puppy mills is going to make anything better, because they'll just find another way to continue doing what they're doing.
Well, other states do ban them, though, and a lot of them move to Ohio, or they operate out of Ohio, a lot of them.
Right.
So it must do something. I mean, if you make it against the law.
Well, except that my sister lives in Texas and does a lot of rescue for border collies, and the same things are going on with mass breeding of border collies and things like that that go into shelters and get killed on a regular basis. So, I don't know. I mean, I met somebody who was she was a backyard breeder. I was looking for a rescue dog of a specific breed. And this dog, you know, she claimed that she was a rescue breeder, but she had a dog that she was going to sell to me. He was 3 months old, and he had a level 4 heart murmur. Now, how is that fair to the dog, let alone the owner? If the owner doesn't know that, a level 4 heart murmur may include surgery or having to put the dog down. You know, that's not right either.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't own a puppy mill. Well, she is a puppy mill, but, you know, on a small scale.
Mm-hmm. There's kind of two issues here, how we regard the animals in the first place. And some people defend the Amish, saying they just have a different sensibility about domestic animals. Domesticized
but
animals.
Not they, when you put them in these tiny cages and you breed the dogs over and over.
Well,
and over.
Some people compare it to, and likewise, there's the concern about chickens and hogs, and any kind of animal that's used is considered more like a farm animal, and that's debatable on either side. And then there's the issue of the quality of the animal as it leaves the puppy mill and is sold. Do people understand that it has a higher risk of disease or physical ailments?
They go to Petco. They go to direct, or not Petco, Pet People. Not Pet People. The one that sells the puppies as part of their store. And that's like their direct connection. And people think they're getting a healthy dog, you know, a happy dog, but they don't really know the story behind the dog. And even if you get a rescue dog, they will give you, if they're a reputable rescue organization, they will give you the background as well as all the shots and treatments that they've had to have. And right. when they put the dog on Pet Finder, if it's a special needs pet, like that dog with a heart, with a level 4 heart murmur, they know they're taking a risk, but somebody might adopt it. But at least they're being honest about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas the Amish just keep breeding and breeding and breeding, and they don't care, you know, mm-hmm. what they put out there. And then, you know, it's just that whole romanticized vision of how much is that doggy in the window from the 50s. Mm-hmm. And then somebody comes home, and the dog's really sick.
Right.
And it dies, you know.
Well, there is the continues to be a demand whenever you go into one of those pet stores. There's always people looking, and I mean, it works. That's for sure.
It makes me sick. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. I keep getting one or two. I consider myself a semi-veg, and I keep getting one or two steps closer to being to becoming more of a vegetarian. And I don't know how my sister continues to do her work and isn't a vegetarian, but it really upsets me. I mean, even the...
Well, what do you think about the lawmakers? I mean, why do you think this is happening in Ohio? What is it about Ohio?
I think that the Amish and... have a lot more influence than what people think they do in terms of this type of thing. It's their main. It is the highest level of income stream. I don't, you know.
But do they? Well, okay. I'm just wondering what kind of influence they bring to bear on the legislature.
I think that I don't know if they have lobbyists, mm-hmm. but I know that the stores. Say, well, we're buying from reputable breeders. We don't know what happens here. You know,
right.
We're not responsible. And they sign off. And there's no. I just think that there's not enough people or a lot of energy or concern for regulation of that kind of industry. And until it's banned, those types of things are banned in Ohio. Then the situation's not going to change.
Okay. Beth, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
We've been talking about the puppy mill bill. It stalled once again. It may be taken up again when the legislature returns in November, but there's only a short amount of time because the session ends in December. So tell us what you think. We have an open forum for another 20 minutes. We got some calls waiting. We'll get to Anthony and Cy and Bob and more when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the Amazon economy. Amazon.com is busting way off the web, taking over huge chunks of the real world economy. We'll lay it all out. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point comes your way starting at 1 o'clock this afternoon here on 89.7 NPR News. In the weather forecast, mostly sunny today, the high approaching 90 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 68. Then on Friday, partly sunny, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly afternoon, and a high of 81 degrees. Friday night, showers are likely with an overnight low of 68.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. The seventh season of Jazzoo kicks off Friday, July 13th with Rock and Roll Meets the Blues, featuring Jonathan Elliott at the Columbus Zoo. Gates at 6:30, showtime at 8. Tickets and details at jazzartsgroup.org.
We have an open forum for the next 20 minutes. What do you want to talk about in the news? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Brad emailed us. He said, it seems to me that Romney visiting the NAACP, like other Republican candidates who have done that in the past, is monotonous political theater. The crowd politely claps on occasion, but mainly shows contempt for any Republican candidate. The Republican candidate, in turn, must appear at the event or he's criticized as anti-African-American or anti-middle class. It's news each election season, but it's never really news. Kind of feel sorry for Romney and other Republican candidates because they can't win with the NAACP crowd. Also, are there any terms for Romney's health care plan or his lack of a plan? Rom neglect? Interesting. Brad, thanks. Well, you know what? When Romney started to speak at the gathering yesterday, he received a standing ovation It sounded like they were all ears, but then what he's being criticized for is spending so much time trashing Barack Obama and the Affordable Health Care Act. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to talk about that. Bob in Akron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Good morning. I have a comment, and possibly someone can answer it for me. Is a question in the same modem. With this new health care law, I don't think the doctors were taken into effect because many doctors are fleeing the primary care physician status in this country, especially in rural and poverty-stricken areas.
Well, they're not just fleeing. It's never been a great number of them to begin with.
Yes, but a lot of them, especially in the Akron area where I come from, because I just had a liver transplant and I was put on Medicaid, a lot of these doctors don't want to be on this Medicaid program or Medicare. They just don't take the patient because of the low reimbursement, and they can't afford the business.
So, right. Well, depends. I mean, I don't know what you're citing as your...
A lot of doctors are fleeing Medicaid.
That's kind of anecdotal, right? Though you don't have a source for that, right?
No,
okay.
You talk to doctors, they're leaving. And if you go into the Medicare books and the Medicaid books, and a lot of these poor people, and I'm not poor, but if you look at these Medicare and Medicaid books they send out, the closest PCP sometimes is 5, 6, 7 miles. So you're just going to be forcing people to the emergency room.
Okay, so that's the case now, right?
You're just going to be forcing more into the...
How is that the case that you're going to be forcing more?
Because more and more doctors are retiring. More and more doctors are coming out of college in specialized medicine. They refuse to deal with the Medicare and Medicaid system.
So what would you do to address that issue?
Well, my question was, and it is a comment, the doctors weren't brought into this factor. They're the ones that really have to say if they're going to actually wait on these customers. And that's what they are, as customers. And can the system take on another 50 million people with fewer doctors going into primary care? And can you force these doctors to actually take in new patients, even though they don't want to?
Well, I would imagine you can't. But okay, I'm wondering what would...
Let me tell you, when I was in Europe and I had this liver transplant on vacation. You went to the emergency room in Paris.
Yeah.
Very few primary care physicians are on the street. You went to the waiting room, you took a number. Thank God I didn't have to do that.
Were you an emergency case, or did you go to Europe to have the transplant?
I was an emergency case.
Okay, so you were at the emergency room. Okay.
Okay, and most of these people take, you know, like they do in our system, you wait during your turn.
Right.
Or to the degree of what's, you know, wrong with you.
Yeah, they triage, right.
Yes, they triage, I understand. But if you understand that more and more of these doctors are going to be retiring and getting out of the primary care system, it's going to force more people into the hospital system. And they're already overloaded in emergency rooms. And I just want to hear other people's opinion on this because I know doctors, I've talked with them, they're getting the hell out of it. They don't want to have to deal with the low reimbursement.
Okay, so we go back to the same question, though. What do you think we should do? Because people are going to the emergency rooms anyways when they don't have coverage. And when they do have Medicaid, you're saying there's fewer and fewer doctors who will take their Medicaid. What do we do?
That's what my question and comment is.
Okay.
And the question is, doctors were not taken into consideration on this.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, what would doctors say? I mean, what do you think, knowing what you know about how they're leaving or dropping their Medicaid patient load, what would they have done differently?
That's what I'm asking you, because I talked to some of them. They said it's a no-win situation for them. They're either going to be waiting on customers, and basically a patient is a customer when you start getting that kind of turnover. And it's not as, you just can't deal with that mass quantity of people. And that's the biggest fear, is that they're going to be overloaded. And so a lot of them are just opting out, and they're opting out also because they fear the benefits are going to be going down. They hear that $500 billion figure where they're going to be cutting direct payments to doctors, and they're just going, okay, let the hospitals deal with it.
What do you think about the governor's retooling of Medicaid coverage in Ohio and how they're trying to get more bang for their buck and change how Medicaid coverage Medicaid care is handled?
Well,
you think that might help?
Well, it depends on how they set it up. Right now, I'm single. When I got back to the States, I was put on Medicaid. Now, to get that Medicaid, I had to reach a spend down of nearly $670 a month before I could even use the Medicaid system on a check that came in at $1,395 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So if they continue to do that, you're still going to be leaving people behind in the state functions of medicine.
What would you have preferred when you returned from Europe and your transplant and that kind of thing? When you came to the United States, how would you have wanted to be handled as a medical hardship case?
You know, that's hard because one part of me says, Bob, you know, you didn't take care of yourself. And the other part of me says, well, you know what, Bob, we got to continue living. We got to break.
Mm-hmm.
We got to live within 18 hours when we're sitting there dying in Paris.
Right.
Okay. It's a conflict for me.
Right.
And I think it's a conflict for a lot of people.
It's
just
their
like
life.
It's gonna be, but yes, it's my life.
Right.
But I think it's also a conflict for these doctors who are going to be overwhelmed. And then, like I said, they're not being replaced at the manner that it was 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Okay.
And they're going into specialty medicine because, you know, when you come out of med school, you got $300,000+ debt.
Some of them do, yeah.
Yes, and you don't have that kind of money to be taking pittance from the government working for minimum wage. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it comes down to on a workload. You're working for minimum wage.
Boy.
As far as a doctor is in his mind. Not financially, but in his mind.
Well, okay. In my mind, then, he's not working for minimum wage. He or she, I should say. Hey, Bob, I want to turn to some other people, but I really appreciate your call.
Okay, if someone else.
Hope you are recovering well.
I'm recovering very well. Thank you very much.
That's great. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have an open forum for another 10 minutes. I want to get to as many people as I can. Vicki in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Vicki.
Yes, hello. My name is Vicki Diesner, and I'm with the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. I'm their Midwest Legislative Director, and I want to reach out to you and tell you how much puppy mill legislation must pass in the state.
Well, what do you
need to help?
And it stalled again. So what is your, first of all, why do you think it stalled in Ohio? Why can't the legislation, why won't the Ohio legislature, Ohio General Assembly, I should say, enact puppy mill legislation?
That's a very good question. As you know, the Senate has worked on it for 7 years.
Right.
And really created a bill that was workable, except we would say there needs to be fees to enable the Ohio Department of Agriculture to go out and actually regulate
enforce
the puppy
it.
Mills.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But right now it sits in the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. And Representative Hall needs to be contacted and asked, please move this legislation. It was supposed to have moved in May. It did not. And, you know, we do believe there is certainly a lot of pressure on the House Agriculture Committee by opponents such as, you know, the breeders of puppy mills who feel it will affect their industry. But the bill is created to actually help good breeders create standards of care. I was just at a puppy mill auction in Amish country in Millersburg 2 weekends ago, and it was so sad to see over 450 animals being auctioned off as though they were in the slave trade, being discussed what was their breeding capacity, what was their dental status, which unfortunately was very bad in so many of these dogs. For example, these dogs are held in cages where they only have water bottles like gerbils, so they can't slosh water around in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when these puppy mills are raided, these dogs are found with their jaws just absolutely rotted out because of horrible dental decay. These animals need to be released. They are kept in cages that are no bigger than putting a beagle in your dishwasher.
So when you've been to probably been to hearings before, right?
Yes, I have.
What do lawmakers, how do they respond to these kinds of stories?
They are appalled. it's actually a surprise to so many people to think that animals that end up in pet land and other places actually come potentially from puppy mills. These puppies oftentimes are sick. It's a lemon law. It's a consumer issue. But what we don't realize, it's really the adult dogs who are kept in these cages year after year, never allowed out. And in fact, oftentimes when they can't breed anymore, they basically are either shot in the head or drowned, you know, because they are not productive anymore because they're treated as livestock. And we have to change this. Puppies and dogs are our companion animals in this country, and we need to treat them with humane conditions.
All right.
So we need to pass Senate Bill 130. We need to ask you to ask all your constituents out there to contact Representative Hall and the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee and tell them move this bill this year.
Vicki, is there an organization that represents the breeders that oppose this legislation?
There are a variety of groups that, you know, represent breeders and other constituents that have concerns about this.
Okay.
You know, as any bill will, you know, the concern is, gee, you know, you're impacting my private property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to increase fees in regard to the wholesale of puppies. But in reality, the consumers are demanding that puppies are in better shape when they end out in the product of the pet store. They're not in good shape. They have genetic problems. They are unhealthy. We need to improve the conditions of dogs in these breeding facilities so that the end product to the consumer, to our people, will be good companion animals. And certainly these dogs that are bred over and over again in their lives deserve to have a decent life.
Vicki, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kelly in Columbus, you want to talk about AEP's...
price increase.
Price, well, not yet, but they've said that they can.
They want to, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
because of the repair from the storm.
Correct. And but, you know, they did it when we had that ice storm back in 2004, whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They did it with Hurricane Ike. They profited. I'm going by what I heard the other day on the news, but they profited like $1.3 billion. And, you know, if I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong again, but isn't a profit after they paid their bills and everything? That's, you know.
Well, they still have to profit. The PUCO is not going to take away their profits. But do you think that they profited too much? Do you think that they, that the shareholders should have to suffer when a natural disaster strikes?
Okay, but...
I'm asking you, do you think, I mean, that when natural disasters strike, should shareholders have to take some of the pain?
Sure, they should take the ding.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's tough enough the way it is, and it seems like every time something happens, they want to raise the rates, and, I mean, even if it costs them $85 million to get everything back up, out of their pocket, you know, out of that profit, they still got, you know, profited well over $1 billion and $2 million, you know, 1.2. So, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. They've done it all every time, and then they've just caught up in this scam here, ripping, you know, tripling the charges on the small business guy, what, a couple months ago? And
well, Kelly, let me ask you, did you lose power?
No, I did not. I got a generator.
Okay. But
so,
you did lose power, but your generator kicked in then.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's
so
good.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know. Just it's hard enough for people, you know,
mm-hmm.
nowadays to get, you know, this economy and everything. It just seems like they want to keep taking it, taking. That's all I have to say. I appreciate you letting me talk.
You bet. Kelly, thanks for your call.
Have a good day.
Take care. Just have a few more minutes. I want to get to Anthony in Columbus. Are you there, Anthony?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hi.
Listen, I was going to talk about Mitt Romney, but it's kind of all tied in. AEP, it's a residual income for them. You will never, ever, ever be able to pay your electric bill off. So the problem is when they raise the rates, they never lower them, and they are profiting. I mean,
in other words,
$1 billion.
Okay, so then you're saying if they raised them temporarily— But they don't.
But they don't. That's the problem. It's another thing of people being entitled and being rich. Like Mitt Romney doesn't want to show all his taxes because he feels like he's better than everybody else. I mean, what is there to hide? He's got money over in the Cayman Islands. And it's just crazy. Even when she was talking about the dogs, there are people without health care. And this is literally the richest country in the world. Have some humanity. Not everybody is a gazillionaire. Not everybody, you know, I mean, just make things evenly fair. Last time I checked, Mitt Romney, he's a part of the problem in the sense that knowingly or unknowingly, Bain Capital, he made money. Okay, mm-hmm. Somebody got jobs. Let's say that for argument's sake. The last time I checked, there's no way that you can send a kid to college and own a home at Domino's. Those kind of wages are not substantial. You're mm-hmm. not going to do anything. And you can forget about health care.
What do you think about the health care affordability or the, affordable health care?
It's a good thing. Okay. Last time I checked, moral compass is not in company background. Companies are formed to make profit.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're lowering wages. That's why they don't want to have health care. That's why you have to have a referee in the middle of this to make people do the right thing. They're sitting on trillions of dollars, and they don't want to help people that are actually helping them, their profit line go up. You know, okay, just pay a guy a decent wage and make sure that he has a decent, comfortable living. You don't have to give him the whole farm kit caboodle. Let's just share a little bit of it all together.
Okay.
You're going to pay your electric bill for the rest of your life.
That's an interesting concept, though, the idea that, you know, you're never going to pay off your electric bill. Interesting thought, Anthony. I'm glad you called. Take care.
Hey, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, time for one more call. Vanessa, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My issue is with Buckeye Valley School District. They have a special election in August, and it's to build a new grade school at a central campus. What they want to do is close our community grade schools in Ashley, Ostrander, and Radnor. The Radnor grade school, at the end of every year, they walk the students through the community,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about the architecture and the history of this community.
And
they're taking away the children's opportunity to ride their bikes and walk to school.
The idea of this is to save money by consolidating, right?
Exactly.
Well, that's something that's being pushed by the governor on down through the legislature. A lot of people believe that that's the way we have to go. We have to consolidate townships into cities and anywhere we can to save money these days.
I understand that to a point, but I feel like we're being blackmailed because if we don't vote for this new elementary school, they said that they are going to close the Radnor grade school in the fall, in September.
Well, so I thought you said it was going to close if they have the new elementary school.
Well, we will have a few years.
Okay, I get it.
To have the grade school.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question. We've talked about consolidation before. I think it's an ongoing issue that we'll be covering in future shows. So I'm glad you called and brought it up. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Take care, Vanessa.
You too. Bye.
Coming up, we're going to talk about twinless twins. It sounds easy. It's easy to say, but it's not easy to live. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
Coming up next hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher, a salute to Woody Guthrie on when, as he approaches his 100th birthday, or would have. The guests on Ann's show will include Ed Cray, author and professor at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, Jeff Place, who's the head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection, and Bill Cohen, the correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and also a representative of the Columbus Folk Music Society. That's coming up in the next hour of All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Mostly sunny today, says the weatherman, with a high approaching 90 degrees. Tonight, clouds move in with a low of 68. On Friday, partly sunny, but a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly afternoon. A high tomorrow expected to be about 81 degrees. Right now, we have 83 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus. Check out the Buckeye State by visiting seeohiofirst.org and learn all about our home state.
Anyone who loses a sibling suffers from the loss, but when siblings share a womb, when they are twins, the death of a twin, whether at birth or late in life, can leave the survivor with increased odds of depression, suicide, and anxiety. This weekend, the Twinless Twins Support Group's 2012 annual conference is being held in Dublin. For more information about that, we've posted a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Here to talk about the bereavement process and moving forward from twin loss is Mary Morgan. She's the author of Beginning with the End, a memoir of twin loss and healing. Mary lost her twin brother Michael in 1961. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Also here with us is Susan Schneider. Longtime listeners of WOSU may remember Susan and her twin Robin of Twin Horizons Travel. Susan lost Robin to cancer and is now a member of the Twinless Twins Support Group International. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you.
I should say welcome back to WOSU Studios.
Thank you, Ann. It's nice to be back.
For our listeners, are you a twin or a parent of a twin who has lost a twin? We want to hear from you. Tell us your story. Tell us how you've coped. 614-292-8513. So, Mary, Twinless Twins go through a unique bereavement process. Tell us more about that and the additional barriers that Twinless Twins face.
Well, I think that it would be good to go back to the whole issue of the twin bond. There are really two issues in twin loss, I think, the two main issues. One is the twin bond, and the other is the whole issue of identity. And in terms of the twin bond, I mean, twins, whether they're fraternal or identical, grow from an embryo in relationship in the womb. It's extraordinary. I mean, the new sonogram studies are showing that twins at 14 weeks, that's really the beginning of the second trimester, are reaching out to each other in a kind of primitive relationship effort. At that early, early, early stage, it's extraordinary. They're not just bumping against the room and then hitting each other, mm-hmm. you know, by mistake.
They know
they're
each
other.
They're having a relationship.
That's right.
There's a relationship forming.
There's a primitive relationship forming, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you have this whole bond that's developing in the womb, and then it develops again, continues that after the twins are born, depending a lot on the environment that the parents create or the caregivers create for the twins. How close are they going to be? Are they going to be thought of as one unit, or are they going to be encouraged to participate in their development of separation and individuation? Some twins don't really, they don't, especially at terrible twos, which is that time we all are aware of if we've had babies, where they just all of a sudden are very, you know, aware that they are separate. And this is a difficult time, but it's an important phase of development. Often the twins are born at the end of the reproductive cycle for the mother. So they're the last children. There's a lot of stress in the home, so they don't complete that time. They have each other, and they really transfer the mother to each other and become each other's transition object, and or Linus blanket, as we would call it. So there's an incredible bond, and they are used to seeing the I. The identity becomes the I in a framework of we. And if the twins, as they grow older, have not really they've not completed the separation and development tasks that are required for most of us as we grow up, and it's always on a continuum.
You're right, exactly.
But then when one of them dies, they have an enormous problem. They do not see themselves as separate, so when one dies, they don't know who they are, and they feel like they're half of themselves. They need to, when they begin the grieving process, they need, first of all, to learn what it means to be an individual. So that's a big task in itself, one that most therapists are not aware of. They need to learn about being an I, and then they need to begin the grieving process itself. And that is always done in connection. And when anybody loses somebody in deep personal grief, disconnection is the word that happens in isolation. So that isolation needs to be broken, and then they need to move into some kind of connection, first to themselves, to their own feelings, and then to each other, to other people, to form some kind of a community of healing. We really do heal in connection. So that is the beginning of the process. And for twins, it takes a long time. People are not used to that in our culture. They're used to getting up and moving on.
And that's true of grief in general. So when you're dealing with sort of with this double whammy, if you will, and then as you mentioned, it's along a continuum. And it's probably, that's what it takes is therapy or understanding yourself very well to understand where you fall in that continuum and what you might require.
Exactly.
Susan Schneider, member of Twinless Twins, a Twinless Twin yourself. You're very close with your sister, Robin. Where might you describe yourself as falling along that continuum?
Well, let me say in first, and this is not an original thought with me, I recently read that sorrow is the soul's recognizing change. And that enormous changes, one of them being all of our lives. It was, are you Susan or Robin? When Robin died, nobody ever asked me if I'm Susan or Robin anymore. What the Twinless Twins gives is a safe place to talk about your twin, because when anybody has a loss, they want to talk about this person. I think I drive our friends crazy talking about Robin because she is such a presence to me. And Mary knows, and I don't make a secret to the Twinless Twins. The day she died, I tried to go with her, and I made a really good attempt. Our friends and family say she got there and she pushed me back. I now feel I have a new plan. I'm going to work myself to death. A natural death.
Sounds like you're very engaged, though, in life.
Well, I have a new plan, and it is to honor Robin, because I began to realize as much as it's about me, it's about her as well. And I need to do things. Our brother, Doug and Scott, and our sister-in-law, Elaine, have endowed a foundation in her name. Our parents were very understanding. Mom and Dad were great. I'm fortunate in that I had a support group of friends that was extraordinary and very patient with me, because as Mary said, it's a very long process for anybody. It's an extraordinarily long process in general for twins, and what the other twins find in the Twinless Twins, that as I said, I'm grateful that I didn't need so much, but a lot of the Twinless Twins find that they're allowed to continue grieving. They're allowed to go on their path beyond when their friends are. And our thing at Twinless Twins is helping through healing. And I have been given the gift of a introduction to a gal in England who has exactly the same illness my sister was diagnosed with on our birthday after a lifetime of health. And her sister has died of it. So she lost her identical twin to this illness. She has it. And I am able, in some small way, to help her deal with the pain. When I first contacted Twinless Twins, Michelle, our executive director, put up with an hour phone call from me and put me in touch with someone who had lost a identical sister to the same disease, and we talked. And these people get it. They get that Thanksgiving is really tough and Christmas is miserable, the empty place on the table.
Like everybody, it is for anyone
for everybody.
Lost somebody
exactly,
they love, though.
Exactly. For the twins, our birthday is excruciating because It was always our birthday. You never didn't share a birthday.
Right.
And so you have to develop coping mechanisms.
Dale in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I still have my twin brother. We're identical
lucky
twins.
You. Lucky you.
We're identical twins, but as you both probably know, we're rare in that we are mirror image identical twins.
As were Robin and I, yes.
And there seems to, you know, we're diametrically opposed. I'm right-handed, he's left-handed. You know, we have different personalities and different tastes and things like that. And I was curious about the effect on someone. I know identical twins that are not mirror image are a lot closer.
We actually have twins in the twinless twins. We have brothers who have lost sisters, twins, boy-girl twins, fraternal twins. Now, we always said, you know, Robin was right-handed and Susan's a southpaw, but we shared many characteristics. Mm-hmm. But keep the contact information. One of you is going to go first. And it's fabulous group.
We share nothing now.
Mary Morgan, is it something that twins necessarily think about before they have to?
Well, I would say, yeah. I mean, we have a twin right with us talking to us. Maybe we could ask him. But my own feeling is, no, you don't even begin to think of that. And I think the organization can be quite threatening to twins who don't think about it. And it's a terrible thing to think about. My always feeling is that TTSGI, our organization, is like an insurance policy.
It's just there when you
need it. Yeah, and we're a wonderful organization. And I would love if regular twins would give to our organization the way they do to their own insurance policy. So they know that, if God forbid, if that ever happens to them, that they will have a group that will open their arms to them and take them in and help them on their healing journey.
Dale, thanks for your call.
You know what they let us do, Ann? They let us talk about our twin. They let us connect with people who know the experiences of grief, people in grief. Frank DeFord, who is a commentator for NPR and a sports person, said that when his daughter died, he thought, why didn't the world stop? Why is the world going? Why are they delivering the mail? An extraordinary person has left. I know you've had loss in your life. And that's what everybody feels in grief. With the twins, one of Mary's colleagues said in her book, Alone in the Mirror, twins are emotionally married. Twins are emotionally married from birth, and there's no possibility of divorce. And it's really, you have a connection. You have a twin bond that is, Mary referred to it, in the womb. And it's that loss is extraordinary.
Can I just
Mary
say
Morgan,
something?
Sure.
Yeah. What I think that our mission is in terms of healing, I believe that we have a natural healing imperative, that we have a process within us that, just like when you cut yourself, your physical body goes into a miraculous, sophisticated process of healing. I think we have the same thing in our psyche. I think that our culture doesn't support that healing process.
Absolutely.
And that we need to become partners with the healing process. And what really does healing mean? In terms of the loved one, we're talking about deep personal grief now with twins, seen through the lens of twin loss, right? Mm-hmm. I do that in my book. That's the whole point of my book. But the point is that when you grieve, what you're really doing is you've lost the physical person that you adored. That person is imprinted in your psyche and in your cells and everything, especially with twins. That process needs to be about letting go the physicality of that relationship. Once you've really let go the physical relationship within your psyche as well, you then can come back into relationship with your twin or your loved one in a new way. You then can be present for the memories that come up naturally without pain. And you then can experience the love that lasts forever and really allow your loved one or your twin to be present for you in your life in a supportive and beautiful way.
Jody,
that's what healing is.
Sorry. Jody in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jody.
Hi, Ann. I am the singleton of twin sisters, and we lost Lori in 86, and the surviving twin has definitely, you know, had the struggles that you've spoken about, and their birthday is January 1st, so the family was all kind of very awkward about celebrating their birthday, and I'm glad to hear about the twinless twins. I'll talk to my sister and see if she's interested in going, but it's good for me to hear that our situation was not
Jody,
I have a
suggestion.
There's a book, go on their website, called Living Without Your Twin. I have recommended it to a number of twins, and you know what? I had one gal call me and said, I didn't think anybody understood. Get that book. Yeah. Give it to your surviving sister, and maybe that would be something. And I want to take 1 second here off subject to say I want to thank all of our wonderful listeners who listened to Rob and I over the years and have been just so gracious to me in my bereavement. And your listeners are just delightful people. But, Jody, go on the website. Get the information. I mean, this is the only time the conference is going to be in Columbus. If you can run down to the Dublin Embassy Suites this weekend, we'd love to have. We'd love to have
the bike festival. Though.
Oh, that's right, the bike festival and the food truck festival. I heard about an Ann's show.
Columbus, it's Festival City. USA.
I might have some get some of the twinless down there to, for that.
Yeah.
Well, Jody, thanks for your call. Take care.
Thanks. Yeah. Man.
Oh, Mary, we touched another person. We got another person to know about.
We only have about a minute left. I wanted to ask, we talked about the continuum, and at one end is, is Susan and Robin, and at the other end are people who are separated for some reason, one reason or another, and sometimes they don't get along or there are problems. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, does there the same sort of impact even then if you're not close with your twin?
I think sometimes when there's a conflicted relationship, and there are conflicted relationships among twins, just like among siblings and among, married couples, twins are not exempt from conflict. My own personal experience has been that with twins, because of the early bond that they've experienced, even when they're in conflict, that conflict is not it's like a connected conflict. Do you know what I mean? It's not an easy conflict.
It's they're still twins. Yeah,
underneath subconsciously they're connected, so that it makes it quite painful for them.
Well, Mary Morgan, I want to thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here too.
Mary Morgan, she's a therapist and author of Beginning of the End, Beginning with the End, I apologize.
That's all right.
A memoir of twin loss and healing. Also with us, Susan Schneider. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and on behalf of Robin and I, thank you.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.